2000 UTC.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the February 1st edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. The two most successful teams in African men's football, the Pharaohs of Egypt and the Indomitable Lions of Cameroon, are preparing for a semifinal showdown Thursday at the 33rd Africa Cup of Nations tournament. The Pharaohs have lifted the Africa Cup a record 7 times, while the Indomitable Lions have won the trophy 5 times. Their game will be played in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, at Alembe Stadium, the venue for a deadly stampede last week that killed 8 people and injured 38. Ahead of their big semifinal match, the Indomitable Lions have donated $85,000 and dedicated their quarterfinal victory over Gambia to victims of the stadium crush. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
Members of Cameroon's national football team, the Indomitable Lions, sing that God will bless victims at Yaoundé's Olembe Stadium. The players sang on Saturday evening in Douala, Cameroon's economic hub and coastal city, after beating the Scorpions of Gambia in the quarterfinal game in the Africa Football Cup of Nations, AFCON. A statement after the match from Serge Gifo, the Indomitable Lions press officer, said the players had donated $85,000 and dedicated their 2-0 victory over the Scorpions of Gambia to victims of the stampede that killed 8 and injured 38. The statement did not say how the money would be distributed to the victims, but said family members of those who died in the stampede will be given a share. Narcisse Mwele-Kombi, Cameroon's Minister of Sports and Physical Education, addressed the players at Douala's Japoma Stadium after the match.
Vous aviez promis la victoire, mais également une victoire.
Kombi says Cameroonians are happy that their national football team players have helped people who died or were injured while they struggled to watch the Indomitable Lions play. He says Cameroonians are happy that the donation comes after a historic victory against the Scorpions of Gambia. The crush occurred as crowds struggled to get access to Olembe Stadium in the capital city, Yaoundé. Cameroon President Paul Biya ordered the injured to be treated free of charge. Ndukong Edward, a family member of a stampede victim, says the president did not make a statement about any assistance to the families of dead victims. Ndukong says he hopes the government will assist the injured and family members of the dead. He says security lapses by Cameroon's police might have caused the stampede.
If the gate was open as it was supposed to be, nothing would have happened because people would have had access to the field. But if the gate was closed by some overzealous security officers for whatever reason, then they should take responsibility.
Cameroonian authorities blamed the deadly stadium crush on what they said was a massive influx of ticketless fans who arrived late to the game involving the host team and tried to force their way in to avoid security checks and COVID-19 screening. Nasiri Paul Biya, governor of Cameroon's Central Region, where Olembe is located, says the government will assist victims of the crush after the tournament. He says people attending football matches during AFCON should stop on civil behavior, such as jumping fences to get into stadiums.
We are calling on this population to follow and respect the institutions, to be able to cooperate, to be sure that Cameroon does not present a bad image by being very patriotic and responsible. It should never happen again. Cameroonians should put it in their mind that what happened at Olembe should never happen again.
Bia said some government ministers, senior state officials, and well-wishers have been giving financial assistance to the victims in solidarity with the state of Cameroon. Cameroon is hosting AFCON for the first time in 50 years. The tournament, which is the continent's main football event, was originally scheduled in 2019. The Confederation stripped the event from Cameroon that year because stadiums were not ready. The competition that ends on February 6 began January 9. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Thanks, Moki. Still with African sports stadiums, the Ugandan government has announced a $27 million renovation project for its national stadium at Nembole. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, Magume Davis Rakawinge reports from Kampala, Uganda.
Hamson Obua, Uganda's Minister of State for Sports, announced the government had allocated some 97 billion Uganda shillings, or some $27 million, for the renovation of Mandela National Stadium, also known as Nambole. Bernard Bainamani, Uganda Premier League CEO, welcomes the news. He says the suspension of games at the stadium has affected both local teams and the national team's performance.
That is the good news for the sport, and it is good news for the league, among other users that are welcoming this development. Of course, the national team also uses the same stadium for international matches. Actually, I will extend it to even representative teams, those ones that represent us in CAF Champions League, and then also in CAF Confederation Cup.
Mandela Stadium was built with a grant of $36 million from China and was opened in 1997. It delivers its name from former South African President Nelson Mandela. Coincidentally, the late reggae icon, Lucky Dube, also from South Africa, opened it with a concert. Located some less than 10 kilometers from Uganda's capital Kampala, the stadium becomes easily accessible by fans. In 2019, FIFA suspended the use of the stadium due to poor standards both interior and exterior. FIFA found that the pitch, toilets, pavilion and dressing rooms at the stadium were not in consonant with modern stadium standards. Dakaba Ismail Chigongo, a sports analyst in Uganda, says the overhaul of the stadium was long overdue.
Considering that there weren't so many when it was built in the early 90s by that Chinese grant, so there's an attachment, there's sentiment with it. We've also seen our national team, the Uganda Cranes, compete very well when they've played there. So there's a lot of sentiment attached to it. It's an important, you could say, national monument, the stadium in itself. We had become used for a large part of 15 years to having Nambole as part of the sports fraternity. So not to have it is a bit of a dampener.
Dakaba says some national team players have intimated to him that they play better while at Mandela Stadium, which has natural grass, as opposed to playing to other grounds that have artificial turf. Sports analyst Dalin Choyine says the occurrence of the stadium has affected not only soccer but other sports disciplines.
The sprinters and middle distance runners actually had to fly and go next door in Nairobi, Kenya, to be able to train. And this even in preparation for the Olympic Games last year. So to have the stadium back is very important for the athletes. Furthermore, for other leagues that are set to resume this year in the aftermath of the lockdown, say the volleyball league, the athletic season, the Uganda Premier League itself, about three clubs at some point have been sharing Nambole to host league matches. But more importantly, the Uganda Cranes, that for several years since the stadium came into light at the turn of the century has been hosting matches there. So it's very, very important for sportsmen to have the stadium back.
Mighty soccer African teams such as Nigeria, Egypt, Senegal and Ghana have all fallen the Uganda national men's team, the Uganda Cranes, at Mandela Stadium. Cheyune says the players have great attachment and are so much used to playing here. Abdunasa, a sports reporter in Kampala, agrees.
That's the only stadium of its kind that we have in Uganda. So having it in its current state for quite long is a big disservice to our own efforts to promote sports. The runners struggled to train for the recent Olympics because that's where they can access real training facilities. Not the best, but close to ideal. And we really needed Nambole to be in the best state possible because we don't have very many facilities.
And fans here say they can't wait for the renovation to be completed so they can watch their national team play at the ground they consider their fortress.
My name is Omar Adiken. I'm excited about the pending opening of the Nambole Stadium. We will now prepare to go back and celebrate, support our teams, especially the national team. I'm very excited about it.
I'm called Kenya Yakub. Actually, it's good for the National Stadium of Uganda to be renovated, just because we need even actually the government also to put in more effort by constructing other stadiums that we can also host, like African Cup, World Cup. Yeah, most times, actually, I used to go there before, but the stadium wasn't all good. That is it. So it needs to be renovated to the level that even people from Europe can come either play friendly matches in here, Uganda.
I'm Robert Sekajugo. What I miss for Nambole, we have been going there to support when Uganda Cranes is praying. That's what I miss, because we have been going there to watch Uganda Cranes and other teams like Masaza team. I will be feeling okay when it will be finished.
My name is Nicholas Nomanya. We miss a lot from there, and so we miss to win from there, and these days we are not winning.
CAF and FIFA want the works to improve the dressing rooms, playing surface, running track, installation of desks and air conditioners in the media and VIP sections, as well as having seats in general public stands and upgrading floodlights. In recent days, the stadium has worked as a treatment center for COVID-19 patients. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Mugume. Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA Sunny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Now let's go to Nigeria, where a chess and slums initiative has received a financial boost after a social media post from American socialite and businesswoman Paris Hilton. Timothy Obiezu reports from Lagos, Nigeria.
Nigerian chess master Tunde Onokoya and his teammates at Chess and Slums Africa arrive at the Oshodi slum community in Lagos, Nigeria, for an important assignment to teach chess to the kids who live there. The nonprofit has been running chess classes there for 4 years. Onokoya says the idea is to give kids a better chance at education and in life through the chess program.
You know, one of my favorite chess analogies is in that innate ability of a pawn in the game of chess to become a coin. So this is deeply reflective in what we're trying to do with Chess and Slums, right? To show that beyond the stories of poverty, right, every child has potential to become so much more.
Oshodi is one of the most dangerous slum communities in Lagos State, with a history of organized gangs, armed robbery, and street violence, making it difficult for kids to thrive. Onokoya's initiative is to change the negative stories with positive thinking and education. And he says that more than 500 kids from various slums have benefited from his chess program and that the initiative is expanding to other African countries.
And we started having success stories. A lot of the children we trained started getting scholarship opportunities. You know, they started getting, it now became a gateway to life-changing opportunities for them. Their stories were celebrated in international media, make global headlines.
18-year-old Ojo Ayomide joined the team some 6 months ago and is already dreaming big.
I want to be a chess master. Even though I'm a musician, so I can sing. Maybe they want to help me to take me to studio, and I will be going to school.
The Chess in Slums initiative gained traction in early January after American socialite and businesswoman Paris Hilton retweeted a notice about the program and joined the campaign to raise $1 million for the project. Her tweet about the program immediately boosted online donations from about $50,000 to $100,000. Aaron Thompson is a programs director at Chess in Slums Africa.
Once she did that, Tanya and I had gotten a lot of meetings, and we were like, okay, how do we set up a global ambassadorship project? Because now that Paris Hilton is doing this, we can kind of present the ability to be a global ambassador to her. And that's kind of like the next step, is making sure we have global ambassadors out of her fundraising.
For now, Onokoya and his team say with more funds, they will be expanding the Chess in Slums Africa initiative with the goal of reaching 1 million underprivileged African children over the next 10 years. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Lagos, Nigeria.
Thanks, Timothy. The Voice of America is celebrating its 80th birthday today, February 1st. Looking back on my VOA career, I think one of my biggest sporting thrills was meeting the late, great former heavyweight boxing champion Smokin' Joe Frazier at our VOA headquarters here in Washington in 2006. Smokin' Joe was a boyhood hero of mine. I remember watching his fights as a youngster, and those fights included his tremendous trilogy against Muhammad Ali. And if you go to the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page, you can see a photo of me and Smokin' Joe. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. The Sunny Side of Sports, stepping into the ring with Smokin' Joe Frazier.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C.
Now let's go to Senegal, where one female golf star is redefining the sport's image and challenging her country's conservative gender norms. Annika Hammerschlag reports from Sally, Senegal.
When pro golfer Umi Jai first started competing against men, she felt intimidated. They didn't want to play with her, she says, and they didn't take her seriously. But then, in her first match, she won. After that, she had all the confidence she needed to keep playing and beating the boys. Now, as the only professional female golfer in Senegal, she competes almost exclusively against men. As she makes her way through the baobab-lined golf course in Sali, she greets the other golfers. They're all men.
Maintenant, je suis habituée de jouer avec les hommes. Je m'entraîne matin, midi, soir.
She says she's now used to playing with men. She trains in the morning, noon, and night. She says she goes to the gym 3 or 4 times per week, and that also gives her more confidence. Jai turned professional 7 years ago. She's placed in dozens of competitions around the world, including in Thailand, Kenya, and South Africa. The shelves in her living room are overflowing with trophies and medals. Her accomplishments are particularly noteworthy considering Senegal is a conservative Muslim nation where women are discouraged from participating in sports, especially at the professional level. She says when you're Muslim, girls are kept at home so they can find a husband and be made into a housewife. In 2020, the Senegalese Golf Federation agreed to help Jai establish a golf academy in preparation for the 2026 Summer Youth Olympics in Dakar. It would be the first Olympic Games to ever be held on African soil. The project was postponed due to COVID, but it is expected to restart this year. Jai will be tasked with training Senegal's first ever national team, with a special focus on preparing the next generation of female golfers, including her daughter. Bedi Ayn is the president of Senegal's Golf Federation.
Girls will be part of it, I mean, on an equal basis like boys. And that would be something that I think we are prepared and committed to do. And Umi also has that vision and committed to promote the girl, to give them opportunity as a girl to, you know, help them get to the level that they can be.
Jai says she hopes to find a sponsor so she can continue to compete internationally and bring the next generation of Senegalese female golfers into the fold. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Sally, Senegal.
Thanks, Annika. The Professional Golfers Association recently held its 69th annual business show in the southern U.S. city of Orlando, Florida. George McNeely tells us more from Orlando.
Each year, the golf industry has an annual rite of renewal here in Orlando, and the PGA show, held at the massive Orange County Convention Center, has been seen as the most influential business event designed to reunite the global golf community. Now in its 69th year of existence, the show is bouncing back from a one-year pandemic hiatus in 2021. The attendance is lower, the footprint smaller, and there's been a lot of attention being paid to the large household brands that chose to skip this year's show. So I thought it would be better to talk to some brands who are actually here. Dan Murphy is the chief executive officer of Bridgestone Golf.
Golf, over the last couple of years, came out on the right side of the pandemic. To some degree, we've been given a gift, and we're here really to keep good going. We think we need to do our part in the industry, as part of the industry, face-to-face with the industry, to keep the momentum going. We've enjoyed what's been happening over the last couple of years, and we're here to keep it going. And more than that, we've got great news. We've got new golf balls to introduce. We've got a new fitting mechanism to introduce, so we're very excited to share that with the world.
Bridgestone is the golf ball of Tiger Woods, Bryson DeChambeau, Lexi Thompson, and Fred Couples. Matt Kuchar plays the clubs as well, and Murphy says they'll soon be adding to their pro staff, but he isn't quite ready to tell us who just yet.
We're excited. We have it in mind to expand our pro staff, and we'll get to that in due time pretty soon. We got a lot of discussions going on, really excited about the names to be announced in the short term. So you'll hear more from us on that.
Murphy and the thousands of attendees are all following the health and safety standards based on the CDC guidelines, and it's been a comfortable experience in my estimation. Playing golf has been seen as a safe outdoor activity where people can keep their distance, and the industry has benefited from that tremendously. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm George McNeely in Orlando.
Thanks, George. Now let's go to Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, where Samson Omale is standing by with another update on the 33rd Africa Cup of Nations football tournament. Sporty greetings, Samson.
Sporty greetings to you, Sonny. We begin the latest African update with the referee who ended Tunisia's game against Mali 13 seconds before the 90 minutes were up. Zambian Janis Kazwe says he was suffering with heat stroke when he blew his whistle for full time prematurely. Mali were 1-0 up on Tunisia on January 12th in their Group F clash in Limbe before Tsikazwe first blew for full time with the clock on 85 minutes. He was then informed he had blown early and the match resumed. However, he still ended the game 13 seconds early and did not consider any injury time. Speaking to Zambian media on Monday upon his return to the country, Tsikazwe said he was lucky he didn't go into a coma as the doctors told him his body was not cooling down. Staying with officiating at the 2021 AFCON, Rwandan referee Salima Mukazanga made history at the ongoing African Cup of Nations in Cameroon by becoming the first woman to officiate a match in the tournament's 65-year history. The 35-year-old referee was at the center when Zimbabwe played Guinea. Speaking to France 24, Mukazanga said she was proud to make history and hopes her achievement can inspire other women.
I start being a fourth official for the two games.
And then when I got an appointment to officiate, then I say, okay, now this is my time. This is the chance I get. This is the moment. So I'm going to deliver. I'm going to show that I'm ready and I'm capable. I'm going to show the world that even a woman can be dominating, can be a referee in men's game.
Rwandan referee Salima Mukansanga was the subject of a feature profile by Eugene Uimana in Kigali. Sporty Nations Cup greetings, Eugene.
Sporty Nations Cup greetings, Sunny.
I'm happy with my profession.
Salima Mukansanga is putting Rwanda on the map. Sports analyst Ethan Tashobia says,
having Salima Mukansanga as the first ever female referee to officiate at the finals of Africa Cup of Nations is such a huge milestone, not only for Rwanda, but for the African women sportsmen and referees. I think she's opening up for future milestones.
In 1988 in Western Rwanda, a girl who would make history was born in the Rusizi district near the border of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Salima Mukansanga is a nurse by education. She has a bachelor's degree in nursing, which she received from the University of Yitwe. I had the chance to talk with Salima a few days before she flew to France to officiate matches at the 2019 Women's World Cup. She said her father was a big influence in her becoming a football referee. I believe I got this talent from my dad. He was a sportsman. He was not a referee like me, but he played football a long time ago. And when he was old, he used to sponsor football clubs. Salima says when she started as a ref in 2008, she was harshly criticized by football fans who said being an official on the pitch is a man's job. I reached the point where I was about to quit. You see, I do a lot of physical exercises, and I get paid per match. So that time, matches were not many, which means there was no money. It was difficult for me, but because I knew what I wanted, and it is my passion, I had to be resilient. Salima says her big dream is to officiate matches at Senior Men's World Cup. However, football is not her favorite sport. When she was in secondary school, she loved to play basketball, but due to a lack of female teams, she couldn't continue. Her vision changed. And now she says she exercises 6 days a week to stay fit and achieve her dream. Salima says one setback to her development has been the lack of female football competitions in Rwanda. In our country, female competitions are not many, and to get access to international ones is not easy. It's a problem because the more you get men matches, the better you become. In becoming an international football referee, Salima Mukansanga has empowered many Rwandan girls. So says a sports commentator at Rwanda Broadcasting Agency, Rugoga Ruth. When girls hear the story of Salima, they understand that it's possible. It motivates them to keep believing in sports and consider it as a career, a profession that you can make a living with. She's a Rwandan treasure. Rwanda has been recognized globally for its efforts to promote women in politics and other fields. Ethan Tashobia says Salima is a visible product of these initiatives.
I think the international community, especially Africa, is recognizing the effort that the Rwandan government is putting into to support women, to empower women in all sectors. And when Salima Mukansanga was given an opportunity to officiate at the just concluded Olympic Games, I think the CAF was awake. They were watching and they were like, this lady is from Rwanda. She's from Africa, from a country that has been at the top of women empowerment in all sectors, politics. And then here we have a sports personality in her own category. I think it's sort of attached to the entire effort that the country, the government of Rwanda is putting in to empower women.
For the sunny side of sports, I'm Eugene Uimana, reporting from Kigali, Rwanda.
Thanks, Eugene. And that wraps up the February 1st edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Happy 80th birthday, Voice of America. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.